letting me know that, you know, maybe my life wasn't over and maybe there was a way to kind of overcome this and come out on top. And so I started coming up with ideas of developing my own prosthetic for drumming. I had a little bit of like background in like basic engineering and things like that, so I kind of knew where I was headed with it. And so the first device I actually made was this device right here on the table, which was pretty much just a drumstick with a little bit cut off the bottom and an eye hook and a spring from a kick drum pedal originally. And so what this does is it actually screws into right here. And what it did is it allowed me to get like bouncing and bounces, but I couldn't control them properly. They were, I had a very small window of things that I could play. But the way I developed that is essentially like this. I put a few screw holes in these two pivot points, and so it actually has two pivot points. One is right here where the stick bends, and then the other one is right where this white piece of plastic is. And yeah, the spring actually kind of helped absorb the hits from the drum and allowed me to get doubles, if you will. But that was pretty much it. There you see the kick drum spring. It's actually a different spring now, I think. Originally it was just a kick pedal spring that I found laying around. And yeah, so at that point I decided to get back on the kit and continue to practice and try and kind of get as good as I was before for you know, for what it was anyway. And I called my old band back up and we started having a few jam sessions and kind of got the band back together and started playing. And then at this point, it had probably been about a year or so after my accident, I decided to enroll to Atlanta Institute of Music and Media for drums and percussion. I was denied because I didn't know how to read sheet music yet. And so yeah, I took a few lessons, learned how to read, and eventually was accepted and graduated from there a couple years later. And so during my time there, I had some phenomenal teachers, Eric Sanders being one of them. It was our first private lesson we had together, and he was curious on, I guess, my arm and what my capabilities were, what I could do and what I couldn't do, and kind of what the limitations were. And so I showed him what I could play and what the limitations were, and kind of also through this random idea, like, I won't, you know, I've never really been familiar with AI or robotics outside of, like, you know, I watched Terminator a couple times and Iron Man maybe. But yeah, I had this wild idea of essentially developing like a robotic version of the drumming prosthetic that would work the same way these hands do. So they essentially work, there's sensors inside of the arm. And so when I fire this muscle, it closes the hand. When I fire this muscle, it opens the hand. So the concept would be pretty much the same with the drumstick. So like the further I would flex, the tighter it would get, and the more that I would extend, the looser it would get. Wild idea, right? Eric thought it was phenomenal, and clock started ticking in his head, and he was like, you know what? There's a program at Georgia Tech, and they actually build musical robots. And so he had shown me a video of Shimon right here, which is a robot created by Georgia Tech Center for Music Technology and Gil Weinberg and his team, that improvises in real time. And I was completely mind blown at this, and yeah, Eric also informed me that he taught private lessons to a student at Georgia Tech. I forget what his name was, but he was actually friends with Gil, and so he mentioned something to him, and it was kind of like, you know, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't really think I'm going to get a response from this. And about a week later, Gil emailed me back and told me that he loved the idea and, you know, would love to try and move forward with that. And so shortly thereafter, about a week after that, I went to Georgia Tech with Eric, my drum instructor, and one of the other drum instructors, the lead drum instructor of Atlanta Institute of Music, and we had our first meeting with the team at Georgia Tech. So these were everyone from the beginning and the first prototype version that we made. And yeah, I guess at that's when I met Gil Weinberg, and with that, I'll pass this over to him.
Hi. Yes, maybe I'll take a step backwards and tell you what I was doing until I met Jason, just to give context at Georgia Tech. We have the Robotic Musicianship Group, where we are developing robots that are intended to surprise and inspire humans, push music to uncharted territories, and basically try to have artificial creativity modules that would use computers, machine learning, AI, to create something new that human cannot. And the idea is that together, between the human and their creativity and expression and emotion, and the robots using whatever they can do, using ML, machine learning, to create different kind of creativity, there will be a spark that will create new music that will be inspiring for. So musical creativity is different kinds of musical creativity. You can go to a cabin and write for 3 months long compositions that requires a lot of deleting and throwing and creating something that is really deliberate. We call it deliberate creativity. There's obviously improvisation. We call it spontaneous creativity. Completely different parts of the brain are actually activated between creating deliberate creativity or working on deliberate creativity versus spontaneous. And of course, there's many different other kinds of creativity, such as interpreting, playing. And again, this is a completely area of the brain that is being activated. And we look a lot at the brain. You know, we used to think about the brain as left side, right side. Today we know it's much more complicated. We used to think about the brain left side as an analytical side and the right side as a creative side. When you listen to music, all the brain is activated. The different auditory cortex in both sides, even the motor cortex at the back, lower areas about emotion or planning, the frontal cortex. So it's all very interconnected. And we try to take one more step and say, okay, if there's no analytical and creative separation, maybe we can together combine them together by using analytical side to create at least the expression of or the perception of creativity through machine learning. We have a couple of principles. All of our robots are designed to listen like a human. And by that I mean they need to connect to us. If we, I assume some of you are musicians here, if we feel tension and release, a consonant or dissonant, and we want a dissonance to be resolved into a consonant, we want our robots to do that as well. If we have a beat and it detects a tempo and we know where is a one, we need the robots to connect to us because they need to play music with us. So listen like a human, a lot of algorithm of perception, music perception embedded into the robot. And then they need to play like a machine, at least in my mind, because if they play like humans, that would be probably boring. If someone is listening like a human and play like a human, just play with a human. But if you have a robot that use algorithms that humans cannot use and create something different and unique, genetic algorithm and fractals and a bunch of other computer science concepts, then you may be inspired and you'll be surprised to create something new. And all of our robots are a lot about being social. So we want to create this kind of person-to-person or person-to-robot interaction, including the head gestures and including, you know, when you go to a show, you want to see the guitar player playing with or ending a song with a drummer by having eye contact. All of this is very important for robots, which you cannot do with software. You need the physical robot for that. Haile was the first robot. I'll show you some of the ideas that Haile did. This is very old. This is a concert actually in Israel, and the darbuka player is playing some beats. Haile, the robot, listens to it and responds. Look at the face of the darbuka player who just met Haile that morning. So with some appreciation, which is what we're looking for. And now is the beat detection. They're gonna start to play a beat, Haile detects a beat, and will improvise. First, it shows that it detects a beat, and with the right hand, the small hand, it will start to improvise. You can see just next to the microphone. And the way it improvises, it takes the pitch from this drum, the rhythm from that drum, and combines it together to create something that humans would not do, because humans, when they improvise, do not do it very accurately and algorithmically. Here's another example. Hailey plays 7 quarter beats in one arm and 9 quarter beats in the other, creating some polyrhythmics that are humanly almost impossible. Yeah, I don't know if we can hear it a little louder. That would be great. Okay, here's a different little robot that we developed called Shimmy. And it's like a personal robot that you can interact musically with. You can play a beat, and Shimmy will try to detect the beat and choose a song from its library that is most similar to that beat. And it has some other features. It has 2 speakers that can look at you with a phone. We can actually see where you are, and you always be in the center of the stereo field. Shimon is a robot that probably is the longer lasting. It's like 14 years since we started to develop it. And that's the robot that Jason heard about. Can show you that it understands a beat with a bobbing of its head, so it has a social head, which Hailey didn't have. And it can also improvise based on what it listens from multiple musicians, including a trumpet player here. So I give it some beat. When it detects a beat, it starts to bob its head to groove with me. Now it listens to the guitar. It knows the location, so it looks at the guitar player. It listens to what the guitar player plays, and now try to improvise based on it. And now the humans are starting to build on what the robot is doing, and that's a big idea, that there will be something creative that you take from the robot that will push you in a way that you wouldn't be pushed if it was a human. We also developed a machine learning driven lyrics generation for Shimon, that's way later, and the ability to sing using AI. But here too, we wanted to make it interactive. We wanted to be the human to be inspired by the robot. So we developed a rap battle application.
I don't rap. I've never rapped in my life. I've never rapped, but I have done a sim and a map done. A his and a lap done. He's a cap, but I wear a cap. But he's not like his cap. He's a bit Shimon. Help me out now.
Born to perform, champion of every art form, always on the grind. That's what's on my mind. You're behind, push your kind.
That's what's on your mind, my behind, my kind. Get your eyes off my behind.
Okay, as you can hear, the sound for real-time generation of speech wasn't as beautiful as the singing, but and difficult to understand. But it definitely led Jeff to sing or rap in a way that he would never do it before. I don't think he would ever rap if it wasn't with a robot, by the way. Okay, and that brings us to exactly where the point that I made, Jason. So the title of the session is Bridging the Gap Between the Human and the Machine. And I tried to bridge it by having this kind of interaction, but there was a gap. There was a physical gap. There was a separate entity robot that we played with or listened to, whether it was Shimmy or Hailey or Shimon. And I was always interested in bringing it together and create something that is more integrated. And just about the time that we finished a small project and we didn't have maybe a next idea for the next, or a next step for the next idea, I heard from Jason, who is teacher. And that was a great opportunity to bridge the gap and to try to create new ways for humans to be inspired by robots by actually wearing them and being part of them. Let me show you maybe the first time or the second time where Jason came after we developed the basic spec for his robotic drumming arm. there was two things I kind of suggested to Jason. I first said, yes, sure, I'm very interested in helping you with what you wanted, which is flexing the muscle and getting different tightness on the stick so you can be more expressive. But I told you, I'm also very interested in creativity. How about we have a second stick to this prosthetic arm, and this second stick will have, quote unquote, a mind of its own. It will be improvising. So in a way, your own body will be listening to you and improvise, and you can control only one stick if you want, but the other stick maybe will throw you into interesting directions. And he was a good sport, even though later on, as you can see, we went back to the one stick idea and tried it. And what's interesting about this arm is that it's not only responding to Jason's playing, but it can also generate beats and hits by itself, and it can play 20 hits per second, like no human can. So we always try to do something that is listening like a human, but also play like a machine. This machine can play so fast that it doesn't even sound like separate notes. So this is the first time Jason tried it after we developed it with the help of a company called Mecha. So we flex, we have some bugs, it obviously didn't. So very quickly he was able to experiment, look at his face, being excited about two sticks. One of them is playing at 20 hits per second, the other is playing 19, so you can create crazy polyrhythms. And here's how it works from the inside.
In this video, I demonstrate how I control the robotic drumming prosthesis using my forearm muscle. The EMG electrodes attached to my arm send very low latency signals to trigger the robotic stick when I contract my muscle. I can trigger a hit with every contraction, or toggle between different automatic drumming states. This allows me to create cool interactions between my biological arm and my robotic one.
And basically the EMG sensors sense the electric activity that comes from the brain to the muscle, and we use machine learning to interpret it and tell the arm what to do. Here is Jason in some concerts, because after it worked, we traveled around the world performing, showing how this is very tight. And this is when he loosens his muscle, it's very loose. You hear the bouncing. There is a very fast playing that I showed before. We have some producers coming to us asking to record these sounds because they're so unique and put it in the production, a hip-hop producer from Atlanta. That's a polyrhythm. 19 and 20. That's Jason playing a piece that he wrote using all of this functionality. And after this show, sometimes I get emails from heavy metal drummers saying that they would give an arm to be able to do that. I don't think they mean that, but they are impressed. Here's a different example where Jason is actually controlling one of the stick, but the other stick is improvising, and he has to respond to it. And here is a different, we really try to explore different kind of interactions. Andrew, the guitar player, is playing chords. Every chord is detected by the machine learning and then changes how fast Jason's stick is activating. And Jason has to respond not only to his body, but for someone else that plays with him in a kind of strange, intimate way where in a way he controls his own body. Andrew controls Jason's body. So you see different chords change how fast it is. And this is a in a context of a music. It just started. And you can see Jason really, in the beginning it was difficult, but then he really got adjusted and played all kind of riffs and bridges that he wouldn't play otherwise. Some other examples of traveling around the world, this is in Kennedy Center when we brought Shimon and Jason together. Of course, we were interested in that as well. And they're synchronized and playing together, influencing each other. This is a piece by Chris Moore. Interactions between the human and the robot and the cyborgs. That's a concert in the Netherlands where we also brought some of the rapping capabilities in real time into the mix, connecting between Jason, the robot, and Dash 3, the rapper. Very sophisticated rhythms and using machine learning to help the players in case of falling both in pitch and rhythm was one of the challenges. Okay, so then we thought, okay, if Jason can enjoy playing like he would never before, why not everyone? Why can't we have a third arm that will have people with two arms being able to use some of this artificial creativity and improvisation? This is Tyler White, a grad student that who is also a drummer, took some of the ideas that I mentioned before and developed with a team of other students a third arm that responds to how you drum and also to your brain activity. His brain activity on the computer behind. We have a Kinect looking at where he's playing and based on that choosing where the third arm should play. So when he's going to the hi-hat, this goes to the right. When he goes to the snare, it goes to the tom. It listens to how it plays and then changes the speed and the way the hand is improvising. We love this.
It remains horizontal.
There's a lot of engineering here to make it
always. That's helping when the player is vibrating a lot in their shoulder.
Teach the robot actually how to move, and then it's recording the movement and play it back.
Now it's going out of control. We're gonna keep it and show it. Here's a different application where based on where you look is where the hands is moving, so you can control it in a different way. A lot of experimentations and we're still not sure what the best, and it takes time. You know, maybe I'll jump over this so we have some time for questions, but This is different ways to control the arm using PID control for the mechanical engineers here to create different bounces. Which brings us to Skywalker. Skywalker was an effort to allow to have Jason much more control over finger by finger control. This is not my project, I wish it was. This is from Star Wars. This is Luke losing his hand and immediately being able to control finger by finger, hence the name. But we couldn't do it with EMG, that sends electroactivity, because that's very dirty signal. You cannot really have the resolution to know exactly what he means to play in terms of finger by finger. So we went to the lab and we said, okay, maybe we can use EMG with needles that will get into his muscle, and then we may get more accurate reading and maybe be able to control finger by finger. when we went to the lab, in order to know where to put the needles, the little acupuncture kind of needle with the EMG in them, we wanted to see the muscle, so we put an ultrasound sensor just to know where to put the needles. And when we saw that, it was a big eureka. We said, hey, we don't need needles. The ultrasound, we can see the muscle disfiguration, and we can use machine learning to learn from just how the muscle look, not from the electroactivity, but the vision algorithm that looks at the muscle. And it was very complicated, moving in all kind of different ways, but this is exactly where machine learning can help decipher and classify. So this is Jay, a student. The first time before we even called Jason, we tried to see if we can use the machine learning with the ultrasound, similar to what you see, you know, for pregnancy test, controlling finger by finger. And after a lot of training, this is obviously not the first time we tried it. This is the first successful time we tried it. We saw that we can control finger by finger. So then we try to see if we can also control how much the finger is bent. So if you play, if you want to play forte or piano or fortissimo or pianissimo, it's not only what finger is moving, but how much and how fast it uses. So you can see the ultrasound image on the side. You see what the computer is able to analyze and understand, and how we can then move it to a 3D model of an arm that moves continuously, not just discrete. And then and only then we brought Jason to the mix. And this is a great video. Even though you don't see Jason's face, you can hear how excited when he was able to play the piece.
There you go.
Can we have a little more volume?
Yeah!
So, he didn't recognize at the beginning, it was odd to Joy, and he was able to play it for the first time. After a lot of training, he was able to play much better. Let's listen to that. This is probably gonna be too loud. Maybe not. Okay, so we're starting to bridge the gap and provide creative ideas through machine learning and through robotics to allow a musician to not only play an instrument that he was trained on, but actually new instruments such as a piano. But the question was, how can we have it generalized? Can we make it a product, which was an effort, which we may still get back to it at some point. But for that, we needed to see that it worked on many other people, and not only on Jason. And every muscle is different, and every amputation is different. But thanks to a team from YouTube, there was a documentary that they brought a new amputee to try it for the first time. And this is a short clip from this documentary.
The way this hand works is it essentially just picks up the ultrasound signals
Jason
from my residual limb.
Jay,
so when I move my index finger, it'll move my index
and how to train himself.
Wow, for the first time, prosthetics are finally getting to the point where they're getting pretty close to actual human hand. You know, it got me excited. I was like, this is the type of thing that I've been waiting for. If I was ever going to try one again, this would be the type of stuff that I would want to check out.
It's very interesting for me to have someone else who comes and try our technology to see if it can be generalized.
I was 12 years old when I lost my hand and had a prosthetic for 6 months, and pretty much ever since then, I haven't used it, and it's been close to 30 years now.
And there's the impression of your arm.
It's way easier.
That's wild. Yeah. It would be really cool to have a hand in helping to develop the technology.
All right, ready? Just slide it in.
And this is really, this is the first time we tried it. The cameras were there.
How tight?
To capture it.
I would say as tight as you can before it really hurts.
Oh,
because
really?
The tighter it is, the better reading we'll see.
Okay.
Now we apply the probe.
Okay.
So it can read your movements.
Now we also have to work on the algorithm and the machine learning. And for this, we will need you to train.
Okay.
An able-bodied person, when you move your finger, you're not really thinking about moving your finger. You just do it, because that's how we're hardwired. But to be honest, I don't really remember what it was like to even have that hand.
Even though an amputee doesn't have a thumb, they still have the muscle. You still have some kind of memory of how you moved your fingers. And you can think about moving your phantom fingers, and the muscles would move accordingly. And that's exactly what we use in order to recreate the motion and put it in a prosthetic arm. But does Jay still remember how to move fingers that he didn't have for, I believe, 30 years?
Now we'll run the model and you'll be able to control the hand.
You're optimistic. I'm crossing fingers.
Can I cross these fingers? is that an option yet?
Having Jay here for a day and hoping to get him to a point that he controls finger by finger, I'm a little concerned that it will not work in such a short period of time.
Okay. And
ready?
Yeah, you should try each of the fingers.
All right, that's the thumbs.
Oh, shit. Unbelievable.
All right, index.
Yay! Wow, I'm surprised.
Middle.
Dude.
5 for 5. Whoa.
That's wild.
All right, let me do it again.
You're a natural man.
So we got excited about this and figured that this may be able to be something that we can take out into the world. The ultrasound is much more complicated. The EMG is easier. But the problem with all of the shows and all of the gigs that we had, since it was owned by Georgia Tech, Jason couldn't have it. He could not actually make a living with it. There was a very complicated arrangement with Georgia Tech that he was able to show what he's doing, but not own his own arm. So we made a failed kickstart effort to get some funding to develop an arm for him outside of Georgia Tech, so he can own. And it was failed, but it was seen by some people, and in particular, a team from Google saw this effort, and they contacted us and said, this is a great effort. We want to use our new machine learning, TensorFlow, and some other new developments that they have. Maybe we can help you, and maybe we can build this arm. And at the end of it, they created a video. It's a 5 minutes documentary that I think we have time to play to you, and then still have time to for Jason to show you how it works in real life, and maybe some questions. So I will end with this little documentary.
Every day I wake up and I kind of think to myself, how did I get here? But you put your mind to something and you don't let anything stop you. It's impossible to not make progress.
When Jason was in diapers, I knew he was going to be an unusual child. He'd be in his high chair at the dinner table, and if there was any music on, he would be beating on the table. Tap, 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 tap. We realized this kid needs some drums because he's always beating up everything. And he had a band, and then life changed. January 9th, 2012, I'll never forget.
I used to do subcontract work cleaning restaurant exhaust. We'd usually do like 2 to 3 jobs a day, go up on the roof and spray down the duct. Just like I remember a pink flash and then like a loud boom. And then I woke up in the hospital.
When I knew that we were gonna have to amputate his arm, he cried in my arms. He said, Mom, I'm never gonna amount to anything. I'll never play drums. I'll never be able to do anything again in my life, ever. After 3 weeks into him being home, he said, I can't take this anymore. He said, get my drum kit out of the garage. And so we duct taped a drumstick to his arm. He did some little tapping around, and then he turned around and said, you know, I think I can make something work.
Seem like it's growing back, Doc.
just a side of me ever since I've been a kid where if I'm gonna start something, it has to get done. I just won't let it go.
So my current prosthetic is what you call a body-powered prosthetic. It just uses basic mechanics, so there's no robotic controls or no electronics. I use a lot of my shoulder and elbow to kind of exaggerate to get the hits that I want. It's pretty exhausting. It also has limitations on how fast I can play.
Like, that feels like it might be a little too slow now.
At first, it was a little slow. Yeah, it's a weird one.
So I had an idea of developing a robotic drumming prosthetic, and Gil Weinberg develops musical robots, and so I knew Gil was kind of the right person to reach out to.
I understood immediately what he wanted. He wanted to sense more of his muscles and be able to control the bounce of the drumstick.
Basically, we just wanted to be able to get me back on the kit and play as humanly natural as possible.
The model is trying to learn you, but you probably will have to learn how to work with a model.
Yeah, I think most of it now is like the sensitivity. I'm not training it that hard.
Also, there's a trade-off, because if you increase sensitivity, then it's going to have a lot of false positives and false negatives.
Would you like to move stiff loose? How fast are we going to change between the kind of hits?
I mean, I have tons of ideas, but then it's just like, how accurate is everything going to be? You know what I mean?
Nice. I was a little worried. Can we provide him with what he wanted in terms of the latency and the control? We didn't know that it's possible.
Okay, I'm really excited to see if we have signals. Ready, Ning?
The goal is very simple, but in reality, in each of the steps, it's actually pretty complicated.
Oh, see, and that's what happened last time.
We have some crashes, and the stick starts to roll around. Maybe we should have Raghav listening also to get an insight.
So what you might have to do is you just take data while you're moving it.
Like we were doing in the lab.
Yeah, right, exactly. Gotcha. So that might solve this issue.
It could be also the power supply itself.
Right.
There are actually a handful of challenges with creating a prosthetic arm specifically for drumming. Latency is always a big concern. You don't want to flex your arm at a second later for it to do something.
It just delayed by 50 milliseconds. You can notice that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of nuance with exactly how the drumstick reacts. Things as subtle as how tightly do you grip it? How does it bounce? They're really hard to calibrate if you don't have a machine learning system to gather all the data.
When I heard about Jason's story, it really blew my mind. I was like, whoa, I had no idea how far we have come in terms of AI and prosthetics.
So the way the arm operates is we use EMG, which stands for electromyography. Basically what that is it's sensors that are amplified by a battery that pick up electrical signals from our residual limb.
Using these signals, we are able to do recognition of complex patterns with machine learning and then map them to specific movements. TensorFlow Lite is doing that in real time.
And so I can flex my muscle and it will tighten the grip on the stick, and I can extend my muscle and it will loosen the grip on the stick, just like it would with a normal hand.
No, the latency is, it's like none.
Awesome, that's awesome.
And in the last few months, we were able to detect almost 100% of the time this intention.
I can actually feel the feedback from the arm, and it feels as close to a real hand as you can get without it actually being a real hand.
I think what Jason and the team has accomplished is truly awe-inspiring. He took what was a large setback in his life and he moved an entire field of research forward.
So Luis, you can actually...
Let me see what it might mean. Yeah, I mean, there are drummers with two sound hands that don't have double strokes that even. It's amazing.
For the first time, if you look at him playing, you may not even notice this technology. You just see Jason as the great and expressive musician that he is.
Of course, I think there's a need to keep pushing on this stuff because there's always someone that needs help with something like this, and AI is going to be the bridge between that.
Okay, as Jason is setting up his arm to have a real demo, you can also see some of the detection here with the light here. Maybe I'll play to you for a couple of minutes the latest piece where Jason has been participating with our robotic development. It's called Forest. It will be maybe a minute of a video. Hopefully it will get Jason ready to show how the arm works. But let's look at this interaction. We had a forest of 12 robotic arms, which is now we're starting to travel with it. maybe here in South by next year. And Jason is playing and interacting with a bunch of new robots, such as these guitar bots and some tool bots that we developed.